Welcome to Assembly Line, the podcast for entrepreneurs building on the Salesforce platform. We'll go behind the scenes with innovative founders and leaders to share their stories, strategies, and lessons to accelerate your own path to success as a Salesforce ISV. Are you struggling to make sense of the Salesforce security review? It's the number one roadblock slowing down your AppExchange launch. Security Review Partner translates those complex reports into a simple, prioritized checklist. Stop deciphering jargon and start shipping faster. Get the clear, step-by-step guidance you need to pass the review with confidence. Simplify your path to market. Visit securityreviewpartner.com today. That's securityreviewpartner.com. Today, I'm joined by Shruli Markowitz, the president and founder of Fast Track Digital. Thanks for joining, Shruli.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here.
Yeah. So I know you've been working in Fast Track Digital in kind of both a consulting role, as well as now you are obviously an ISV working with your Paytram solution. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about Fast Track Digital as a company and the Paytram app, you know, kind of who it's, what the application does, who it's built for, and what problems it solves.
Sure. So just doing a little bit of a time lapse here over the past 15, 20 years, started off doing working for a company. I was actually a family business where I had a bunch of different roles, mostly technology related. I was always like the geek of the family, you know, the one where everybody's calling when everything's not working. So sort of software, you know, software, business systems, just getting everything to work, a lot of, you know, web work, things like that. So I wouldn't call myself a developer, you know, per se, but you know, I can pretend, especially now with AI and ChatGPT, I can certainly pretend. And that sort of evolved. That business was sold. I went off on my own, started Fast Track Digital, just trying to fill in the gaps that a lot of companies, you know, would have friends and family and other acquaintances always asking me, oh, I need this to integrate with that, and these sort of smaller pieces. And that evolved, again, I'm really going fast forward here, but that evolved into CRM in the Salesforce space probably about 7-8 years ago. So we started with Salesforce. I really like it because it allows people to, especially people like me, who again are not real programmers, but you know, sort of the low code space. But unlike other low code products, you know, you can always do full code as needed. And that was very appealing to me. And started getting some clients with referrals. One thing led to another, and you know, today we've serviced something about probably 40, 50 clients, most of them full build outs, probably 30 or 40 full build outs, and a number of, you know, taking over or doing small projects for them. Many of our clients are nonprofits. Probably 60 or 70% of them are nonprofits. The remaining are businesses in various industries, some healthcare, some HR, a lot of interesting ones. And that's really part of the beauty of Salesforce is that, you know, if you're in real estate management, right, there's software for real estate management. If you're in healthcare, right, there's software for healthcare. But mm-hmm. if you're in some sort of, you know, not in the box type of business, and there's probably not or possibly not software for you, then building it out on Salesforce is a great way to get exactly what you need for, you know, at with great flexibility and a lot cheaper than building full custom. So all of our nonprofits virtually and many of the businesses all had a payment piece in there, and they wanted to accept credit cards either online and have that come into Salesforce, or they wanted to be able to save cards in Salesforce, or like managing payments and subscriptions for memberships or things like that, or even if it's donations, like recurring donations. And you know, if you look at the market, what's currently on the AppExchange, you know, it's not like a new idea. We didn't invent credit cards in Salesforce, but the products there, especially the mature ones, are prohibitively expensive. In fact, one of them just raised their prices because $8,000 a year. And of course, Salesforce traditionally has been, you know, targeting the enterprise, where who for $8,000 a year is nothing, and that's fine, but. Particularly for nonprofits who are on Salesforce, and many of them are, thanks to Salesforce's, you know, great, you know, philanthropy and giving 10 free licenses and great, you know, the power of us and great discounts. A lot of nonprofits are on it. $8,000 for them is a lot of money. Even for companies, you know, we're not servicing, you know, huge Fortune 500 companies. We're servicing small businesses, and they're paying a lot in licensing. There's third party apps they're paying for. They're paying us and spending so much money in an app to take credit cards. Particularly when, you know, you can go, if you just wanted to take credit cards, like the parallel, right? Not in a CRM, but like you had a web form and you wanted to do something like JotForm, right? Or some, mm-hmm. or even Stripe with a page. I mean, you could do that for free or almost, or no cost, $20 a month. So now that, because you're in Salesforce CRM, you got to pay, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for that. That just didn't, you know, didn't seem to make sense. So there are, and I'm just, you know, that $8,000 is the high range, you know, from the higher ranges. But you know, the other products are also quite expensive, $4,000, $5,000, $3,000. And then the features, right? A lot of them have, in order to use it, you have to use it their way. In other words, you need to go to their LWC that has certain fields in it, and you can make a payment. But that sort of breaks the workflow chain, right? Imagine, let's just talk about a nonprofit, right? And they're doing telemarketing, and they're calling their client, you know, their existing list of constituents or donors, and they want to take a credit card donation over the phone. So if you know, they're using whatever they're using, they're on the contact record, they're using a flow, you know, a guided flow, a screen flow, and now they have to go somewhere else to take that payment, that breaks everything. Mm-hmm. So when we started looking into these products that are on the market and looking into what our clients were looking for, they didn't really synthesize because number one, the price. Number two is the manner in which they're implemented. So we said, you know what, we're gonna solve this problem because we figured we have a clientele just from our own clients. You know, we have a sort of a base to get this started. And thankfully, you know, it paid off and it worked, and it's true. And most of our clients did adopt our payment, our PayTram software, which works with a number of gateways. We could talk about that soon. And they're able to, first of all, it's a lot more affordable. And number two is it's all screen. The beauty of this is that we spent a lot of time building this, all with screen flow components. So It can do anything. So if you, for example, want to say, after a payment, if it's a certain amount, do this. And if it's less than amount, do that. Take them to a receipt, take them to a signature page, whatever you want. You can do it because it's just screen flow. And admins know how to do screen flow. The magic we're putting in is we're sprinkling in those payment fields, secure payment fields, where credit cards can be, numbers can be put in, saved, transacted, you know, refunded, whatever it is. And the beauty of it is, if you already have an existing workflow for this, you just want to add the payments to it because maybe now the payments are being done as a secondary step externally, you can actually just plug it right into your existing scenario, existing workflow. And if you don't, and you want to build something, you can build something where nobody has to leave the screen. They're going from step one to step two, whatever it is, you're taking their, you know, and getting the payment in there, and any preliminary steps before the payment or any steps after the payment, even if they have nothing to do with the payment. It has to do with document generation. It has to do with creating records in Salesforce. It has mm-hmm. to do with sending them a link, a text message link. Whatever you'd be doing anyway in Salesforce, you can now do as part of your payment process. And anytime our clients come back to us and say, oh, can you do it this way and can you do it that way? And the answer is always yes, because it's all flow components and you can do anything in flow. As opposed to some of the other products on the market where you have to use, you know, their LWCs, you can't change the forms, you have to go to their special pages, whatever it is. And, you know, you're sort of stuck doing it their way. And that is not as good as doing it your way. So, you know, that's really what PayTram, the two things, if you want to know the two main things are that it's much more affordable, probably much better customer service because we're a smaller company. Smaller companies generally provide better customer service. And the fact that you can do whatever you want with it and implement it in whichever way you'd like. And that's really beautiful. And that's thanks to that, to the way we implemented it with everything on the front end being slow components.
Yeah, that's really cool. So, I mean, I think that consultants kind of get a front row seat to some of the challenges, right, that folks are seeing in the marketplace and what's available on the AppExchange. And so it can lead into actually building something that works for all your clients. It sounds like y'all were helping a lot of nonprofits and evaluating what was available for everyone. And there was a gap between what they needed and what they could install, or perhaps maybe they were what was available on the AppExchange was out of budget. So you all were able to build something that was much more affordable and much more in line with what they needed, and it sounds like more flexible with everything based around flow. So that's really cool that you know, it's a similar model what Stripe itself did. You know, they took something that's very technically very challenging. And very important to get right, and made it much more flexible. Obviously, they have a more developer bent than PayTram, but breaking everything up into flow components and screen flow components, and kind of giving people those Lego blocks so then they can build up what they need is a really smart way of going about it.
Yeah, And you mentioned Stripe. We do integrate with Stripe, of course, as well as a number of other gateways. The funny thing about Stripe is that they're perhaps the biggest and most well-known payment processing platform. And you know, they sort of payment processing and merchant services, right, was traditionally called, is not a new thing. It's around forever since people are taking credit cards. And they just, they're just the darling, right? And can do no wrong. And of course they have beautiful, user interface. And everything. It's funny is that they do things very differently than traditional merchant services. So like we support 5 gateways and 4 of them all sort of work the same way with minor differences. And then Stripe is just like totally different. So Stripe does have that, very, as you mentioned, very developer friendly, great API documentation. And because it's so popular, anything you want to do with it, you'll find the documentation for. And some of the smaller gateways, even if, say, smaller relative to Stripe, they're smaller. Some of them are still very large. It's not that way. Although, almost always you can get what you want done. And we have clients all the time asking us for a certain, like, very unique or, not typical requests, how to do things. And most often we can do it within the frameworks of PayTram. But if it can't be, we can still do it in the frameworks of just, direct integrations. Because we are expert in all the APIs of all the gateways that we support, we're able to do that. And a good example is terminal payments. Most of the time, Salesforce is not being done. Terminal, again, mean, just for those who are unaware, terminal means they have actual device. Sort of like if you go to the grocery store and, say you scan up all your stuff and it's $150, or I guess today grocery store is $250, not $150. And and there's like a little pin pad there, right, where you can tap your card, do Apple Pay, or so that's called the terminal. And there's all sorts of types of terminals. There's ones that are plugged into POS systems, like the ones that you have at your grocery store. There's ones that mobile ones that connect, have cellular capabilities, and those can be used on the go. You might, if you're making, let's say, for example, your pop-up store, or your a lot of nonprofits use this if they make an event, right? If they make an event and they want to take donations at the event, so they'll have one of these little readers. I actually have one on my desk right here, just to show people if they want to see what it looks like. All right, a little reader. And that's a Wi-Fi one, but not cellular. And they can take payments on that. So the issue is, of course, you could take the payment. But when you're starting off with Salesforce and it's CRM, the point is not just to take a payment. The point is that the payment should be applied to the correct, let's say, opportunity in Salesforce or whatever object and record you're using to the correct contact or account. So what happens when you want to take in-person payments from Salesforce, but you're using card present as opposed to, someone filling in the card, typing it in on a keyboard, and you want to use a terminal. So we can support that. We do support that for a number of our clients. It's not part of the core PayTram package, but we can utilize the same objects, fields, and sort of workflow that PayTram uses. And we just build a little custom piece for them straight out of Flow, which can work with the particular gateway and combination of terminal manufacturer that they're using, because different ones have different ways they have to work. So we've done this a number of times. In fact, that's why I have this on my desk, because we're building this out now for yet another client. And it's really amazing. Like, they can be, we have a client that does, they use Salesforce in a traditional sense with, non-face-to-face customers, but then they do these events. Every week they're doing dozens of events all around the country. And at the events, they're selling product. And when they're selling product, they want that they're creating opportunities in Salesforce. And what they were doing till now is they're creating the opportunities in Salesforce. And then they had like one of these Square or Stripe, which is a really handy, great product, right? Software and hardware together. And they were, taking their card, taking the transaction externally on that other device, and then manually having to go back into Salesforce and saying, we took this payment. And so it's taking so much time. Plus, if they ever have to now refund, they can't do it from that record. The customer called up. You have all their Salesforce records in front of you. You can't make the refund. You actually have to go reconcile that back to the Square or whatever provider you're using for the external payment, and then make the refund somewhere else. So by being able to take terminal payments within Salesforce, they actually can click a button on the opportunity and it prompts the terminal. Terminal wakes up and says, okay, the opportunity is $150, swipe for $150. The customer can use Apple Pay or insert a card or swipe a card, whatever, depending on the type of card they have. That goes right back into Salesforce, creates the payment, has the reference ID of the payment. And if in the future they ever, so first of all, their books are in order, it's a lot faster. And if they ever need to refund or void, they're all doing it from Salesforce. And that's just an example of something where, because we're using Flow, it's not like we have a fixed canvas to be able to develop with. And therefore, we can accommodate these out-of-the-box requests that clients have. So Terminal Request, the first one that requested it, was an out-of-the-box request. Then we got it a second time, and a third, and now it's no longer an out-of-the-box request. The only reason why we don't build it into that core PageRAM is just because every gateway and every hardware manufacturer work a little differently. And so we haven't, you know, we're looking to consolidate the package to be something that works for everybody and sort of leave the outlying ones into something we would do as custom development. But that's just a good example of the flexibility that we're able to offer.
Well, so your story is not unique in that, you know, a lot of consultants end up finding a recurring theme or pattern issue that all their clients face, and it leads to a product. What I do think that's unique about PageRAM specifically is that most consultants then build that and they know it's going to work well for their clients, but there's not necessarily that validation that they're going to find product market fit. And so oftentimes you have to go out and maybe do some more customer interviews or prospect interviews and make sure. But when you're building out a product that's so tied to the ability to just collect revenues, whether that's donations for a nonprofit or you know, actual fees for a for-profit company, every company has to do this. Nonprofit, for-profit, whatever.
You know, payments is,
you're very close to like this is something that every company is going to need to do, right?
Well, some companies are very B2B and everything's done with check and, you know, wires or ACH, you know, things like that. And it's not done with credit card, but particularly for B2C, you know, almost everything is credit card. And even in B2B, there's a great advantage to credit card because, of course, you're getting paid right away. You know, you're not waiting, and you are paying, of course, the credit card fees, which are usually somewhere between 2-3%. But there's a cost to waiting for the check and depositing the check too. In fact, I remember where I used to work. They said that after I mentioned that the company was sold, I worked for family business. The company was sold, so I stayed on there for a little bit before starting Fast Track Digital. And that company was part of a huge international conglomerate. And I remember that they said that to cut a check, right, to issue a check out, costs them $70 between the bookkeepers and the account, you know, accounting managers and the supervisors, who are the different people that need to see it, and the, you know, mailing it and tracking it and making sure that it actually was deposited, right? That you know, they conservatively they estimated that for them to pay something with a check cost themselves $70 in time, which is kind of crazy. Now, of course, you know, if you're paying a you know, a high ballot ticket, I don't know, $20,000-$30,000 bill, with credit card, the fees that the merchant is going to incur, you know, 2-3% of that kind of volume could also be, you know, a significant amount of money. But it's also, you know, you get the money right away. You know, you're not waiting for bank holes. You're not where, you know, if the money goes through, you basically got the money. There's a lot of advance, you know, unless it's going to be a chargeback or something, which, you know, is seldom, but it happens. As opposed to checks, which, you know, bounce more. You got to go to the bank or you have to scan it in. If it's a large amount of money, they hold it for 7 days. Sometimes, of course, every business, depending on your relationship with the bank. But there's something very seamless about credit cards that make it worth the 2-3% for many companies. Particularly when, you know, the person paying is happy because they get the points or cash back or whatever it is. And, you know, the person receiving it is happy because they get the money right away. And many companies, it's actually becoming more and more and more popular. Surcharging, right? Surcharging means that the merchant, right, the business is charging the customer for the opportunity or benefit to use the credit card, right? Because why should I pay 3% if you want to pay me with credit cards and you should get your cash back? You pay the 3% if you want your cash back. And that's what's happening. And that's called surcharging. It's actually regulated to some degree. Different states have some different rules about it, I believe, but overall the industry is regulated. It sort of means that if you just say, hey, I'm going to charge you 3%, or, you know, some people try to price gouge and say 6% or something like that and make some more money on it, then you know, then you know, you officially you can't really do that. You have to be like registered with Visa and all that, and say you're doing surcharging, and of course then Visa charges you $25 a month to do that. But so there's a way to, and it has to show up there's technical things like how it has to work. Like it has to show up on the receipt. It has to say like what the original price was, what the surcharge price, you know, make it very clear exactly what the surcharging fees are. But the point of the matter is, people are doing this. People are doing surcharging. People want to do it in different ways. People want to surcharge debit cards differently than credit cards. People want to, you know, maybe they only want to surcharge you if you're paying certain types of bills over a certain amount, or maybe only if you're paying after a certain date. So there is this thing in accounting, it's called dunning. And basically the idea of dunning is that you get incentivized, or rather penalized, for not paying in a timely fashion. So the basic idea of dunning is that, let's say you have a $100 bill and you invoice the client. So you don't have their card on file, right? If you had their card on file, you could just charge them if that was your arrangement. But if you don't, you're going to send them an invoice, and now they got to pay it. Let's say your terms are 14 days. So you might say, well, if you pay early, you get a discount. And if you pay late, actually, now there's going to be fees. And what's cool is that some accounting software, and you can do this in Salesforce too, of course, it will automatically adjust. So you can automatically tack on those fees or tack on those discounts, based on the date of the payment relative to when it was issued. And you know all the rules, right? So you know that, you know, if it's a fast payment, then pay, give them the discount. And if it's a delayed payment, you can add, for every week that's delayed, you can add on another fee or however it works. And so the same thing with credit card charging, with these surcharges, with Paytram, you are able to be very flexible and sort of add on the surcharges or discounts as needed. And this is all really part of Salesforce. It's not necessarily part of Paytram. It's just that Paytram gets supported because it plugs into your regular Salesforce workflow. So we're going off topic here a little bit, but it's interesting how the industry evolves now. Surcharging is like a thing. And when stores started doing it, people had a really bad taste in their mouth, like, you're charging me to use credit card. But now, I think now people sort of expect it. I think gas stations have been doing this for a very long time. There's two prices, at least New York where I live. But, so credit card is there for everybody. Like you're saying, every business or most businesses are to some degree accepting credit card somewhere, sometime. And why have to do it externally in some place that's not connected to Salesforce? Have it all in Salesforce.
Sure. I wasn't familiar with the actual term dunning, but I have seen that same flow, net 10 over 30 payment terms and things that businesses will often do. So it's cool that you support that. I can tell just from chatting with you, your passion and knowledge in the industry, and it showcases a high barrier to entry to get into this, because I think a lot of people assume like credit cards are very straightforward. There's just a tack on a surcharge. How hard can that be? But I know there's a lot, obviously, as you're getting into, there's so much under the hood going on. And like you were alluding to earlier, there's I believe there's like different fees, whether the card is present or not present, and all this kind of
for
thing.
Sure, for sure.
You have to take care of. So,
yeah,
it makes sense that it's more challenging to get into this than I think people think. So it's probably a good barrier.
Well, anybody can get into any industry, right, and pretend they're an expert. But when when push comes to shove, you see who the experts really are. Because it's not really a high barrier entry to do this, the software. I mean, it is, that's what cost us, well over six figures to create all the software. But supporting and understanding the needs, right? It's really, like I say, it's more than just creating the software, because you really have to understand both in terms of like the accounting and billing departments, what they need. And then you have to understand in terms of the merchant service companies or the credit card platforms, what they need. Or rather not what they need, but what they, how to utilize their platform and their APIs to properly. And therefore, when you put that together, then yeah, you do need a broad knowledge of the industry. And thankfully, we have some great partners in terms of our gateway partners who are very helpful. I personally spent probably about a year doing research on the industry and everything before going public with this, just so I should, I feel like I owe it to our clients, right? We're not looking to put out garbage. We're looking to have the highest levels of product and service, and by having this broad knowledge of the entire ecosystem from the Salesforce point of view, from the accounting and billing point of view, and then from the, on the other side, the payment processing, merchant services point of view. I think that that's very valuable to our clients.
Yeah, well, a full year. That's, I was curious if when you started Paytram or started developing, you already felt like an expert in the field. It sounds like you had a lot of experience.
No,
but
I didn't.
You did a lot of research over time.
Yeah, hundreds of meetings with different players all along the way. I mean, it's really complex. Payments, it's funny because, I sort of always give the analogy to email, right? Email, I mean, everyone emails, billions of people a day are emailing. And, but if you actually know what goes behind the scenes, right? If you're an IT person and you have your own mail server, right? You know, it's actually a huge deal. I mean, what happens from when you click send till the next person receives it in their mailbox, it's going through multiple servers. What has to go right for it not to get flagged by spam? There's just a ton that has to, but when somebody has an email problem and their email is not getting delivered, right? I'm sending you an email, you're not getting it. Like, what do we do now? It's very hard to debug that because there's just so many steps in email. So email is so complicated, but yet it's so ubiquitous, everyone's doing it. So it seems like it's nothing. And, you know, accepting credit cards. I mean, everybody accept credit cards. I mean, right. You could have a kid with a lemonade stand with a square type of reader and they're accepting credit cards. So how hard is it to accept credit cards? And the answer is, so it's really not so hard to accept credit cards. It's just like when you have to do, you know, things with it, or be in compliance. I mentioned the surcharging, you know, this PCI compliance, which basically means that you have to deal with the credit card numbers in a safe way, both practically and also technically. Even going through encrypted servers and things like that, that's not enough. There are things that need to be done to be in compliance with the highest levels of security. Because as we all know, there's data breaches, you know, every 5 minutes or every 5 seconds, rather. And, you know, somebody who is not keeping their card number securely will eventually get breached. And, you know, those card numbers will be jeopardized. And, there are these massive fines from Visa and, something like $10,000 per card, I think, right? So it behooves everyone not to be storing their credit card numbers in Salesforce or in any system, in Excel or through email, which I've seen, by numerous people, whether they, are currently our clients and we're formally doing something a certain way, or maybe people who aren't our clients, but just because I'm in the industry, I've seen what people are doing. The amount, it's just so much easier to email a card number or text it, or send a picture of, text the picture. And that's just not smart. Emailing the pictures of cards, storing it in an Excel sheet. I mean, they say, it's password protected. That's better than nothing. But, that's not really secure. So what we do in PayTram is we have, for all of our gateways that we support, and I keep on mentioning our gateways. So we support 5 gateways: Stripe, Authorize.net. So Stripe is sort of like the most ubiquitous out there. A lot of people use Stripe. You actually don't generally get the best rates with Stripe, but it's very easy to sign up with them. You know, you get onboarded right away. There are some challenges if you're processing a high volume. It is a little scary because, you know, they don't really have amazing customer service, and you know, you can get frozen, and then you don't want to talk to, right? You're talking to some, you know, you're talking to offshore customer service. You have there's no like phone number to call. You're really at their mercy. And that's not a great place to be in, but it is the most convenient, you know, to get set up with. And overall, the rates are okay. And, you know, great APIs and very, very accepted everywhere. You know, all software that will have an integration with payments will do Stripe. So that's why we do Stripe. Authorize.net is the oldest and, you know, I would call it the lousiest gateway today, but it is also just because they're so old school. I mean, they haven't redone their UI in 30 years, probably since they launched. And it's just, they do everything, you know, very old way they do everything. Their API documentation is not great, but they are one of the oldest, and many people still use them, and so we support that as well. And then we support
The few that I'm familiar with is Authorize. I mean, I of course know Stripe, and I remember the very early days of AppExchange. Now with AppExchange checkout, it's a pre-built integration that Salesforce has with Stripe. But in the early days, checkout was actually backed by an application called Recurly. I'm not sure if they're still around or not, but and I can recall working on an application, having to work with folks from Authorize.net, and I like Stripe. I'll put it that way.
Then we support it was called Sola Gateway, formerly known as Cardnox, Accept.blue, which is a great gateway. We have a great partnership with them. And then USA ePay, which I sort of like, is like, they were bought recently by NMI. NMI is a huge gateway company. So I like them all, most of the, in various levels. But so we support those 5. But with all of the 5, what we support is called hosted tokenized fields. And what that means is that when you're actually inputting the card number in your flow, the form that you see that you're putting it in is not actually being loaded up by Salesforce. It's actually an iframe. Being loaded up directly by the gateway, which means the credit card number is not actually going through anyone's servers other than direct to the gateway. It's not going through our servers, certainly not. It's not going through Salesforce, even Salesforce's servers. That's the highest level, because the gateways are all at the highest level of compliance, of course. I mean, that's their business, right? They have to keep everything secure. So they provide people who want to enter cards with this mechanism to do it in the most secure way, which is going direct to them. So this is something that a lot of websites do have. If you're going to make a payment on a website, I'm sure you know many people are familiar with like the Stripe fields. It's a cool field because like after you type in the credit card number, it sort of like zooms out and it like shows you the expiration field. Like it moves the card number, only shows you the last 4 of the card that you entered, and then shows you the expiration. So that's like a Stripe field. The reason why it's like that, and the reason why it looks familiar, you know, I think a lot of Shopify stores have this as well. The reason why it looks familiar is because it's from Stripe, and a lot of places use Stripe. But that's like a hosted tokenized field. They call it, I think, payment elements or something like that. And it's basically this form that they give you where it's the highest level of protection for everybody. And so many gateways do have this. Not all of them do, but many of all the ones that we work with do. And we're using that feature. So whereas in many of the other products that are on the marketplace in AppExchange, including some of the biggest ones, and I'm not going to say names, but including some of the biggest ones, they're not using this. The information that you're sending to the gateway is going through Salesforce's servers to the gateway. It is encrypted. It's HTTPS encrypted. By doing that, you are in compliance. I mentioned before PCI compliance. That means that you have to ensure and attest to. Once a year, you have to actually take this self-questionnaire to sort of put in what you're doing and how you're managing your credit cards securely. And they have different versions of this of this questionnaire. And the easiest version, which only has like 6 questions on it, is if you are doing with hosted tokenization. And therefore, the credit card numbers are not being exposed to anybody's servers other than the gateways. But if you're not doing this, then you have to take this like 80 question test, questionnaire. So it behooves everyone to do it, both practically and in terms of it makes it easier for your PCI compliance. But actually an interesting thing, unrelated to Patreon, but I find it fascinating, is that, the hackers are always getting smarter. So whatever we do to try to, prevent and, prevention is always a pound of, all that business, they're just always a step ahead. And now what they're doing is, if you have a website, let's say an e-commerce website, and you have your credit card field on there, what they're going to do is they're going to make their own credit card fields that look like your credit card fields, hack into your site, replace yours with theirs. And now customers are entering the credit card. It's actually you're intercepting them. You're getting, you might be getting the raw card numbers, and now they have some time until the people figure out what's going on to do what they want to do. So now part of PCI compliance is also to make sure, that your whole website is secure. And you need to, you're supposed to be, they want you to install scripts on your, monitoring on your website to see anytime a file was changed, right? If let's say the web page was changed, then so that, you should be alerted to that. And even though it's very annoying, there is a good reason for it. And in fact, I got about a year ago, I got a letter in the mail from an e-commerce company that I had once purchased, just for my house. It was a certain home item. I don't want to say what it was to protect the innocent, but it was a certain home item. There's a million of these stores online. I'll say what it was. It was window shades, okay, because there's a million of these stores online. So it was blinds, right? Blinds. So one of the blind companies, there's like 50 of them, right? And I got an email from them saying, we actually just discovered a data breach where our credit card form was compromised and replaced, and that's what happened. And this is, a pretty big company. And this happened to them. And I thought it was so funny. I was telling all my colleagues and partners that we work with about this. And this was like when this first started happening, I guess. And fast forward a year later, PCI actually made it now mandatory that part of what you need to do is make sure that your website is firmed up, which is of course a hard thing to do. I mean, web, it's a whole different web development and software lifecycle and web hosting and all this kind of stuff is all much past the limits of what a typical, even Salesforce development is or regular web development. It's like hard. So you have to, really up your game and be really on top of it or hire consultants to know what they're doing in order to make sure you're compliant and make sure that you're secure.
Hmm. Well, so I want to get the timeline of this right. So you're doing obviously a lot of consulting with Fast Track Digital. What year did Patreon first get released?
So there was actually a precursor to Patreon, okay, which was not done in Flow components. It was all, just regular Apex. It was actually Aura components, and it was pretty locked down in what it can do. So it worked with 2 or 3 gateways, and we had it released by a couple of clients, and the clients were like, sort of like, oh, we want to do this, we want to do that, and we weren't able to support them. So this is going back, I don't know, maybe middle of COVID, 21, or something like that. And after hearing these complaints and sort of seeing what's going on and in terms of the flexibility that we weren't able to offer and certain things like that. And also it was like the problem was, it was like a managed package. And like, so what happens now when this client says like, well, after, managed package, everyone's getting the same thing. What happens afterwards? This client saying, oh, I want it to redirect to here. And this client saying, I want to add fields to the form. And this client saying that I want to be able to, whatever, I don't know what, do some other feature. Mm-hmm. Well, if we have to make it for one person, we have to make it for everyone, but what they want, they don't want, like, how do we get everyone happy? And I'm like, sure, we have to rebuild this. We have to rebuild this from scratch. Actually, what happened was, it was an interim step, and that was we had a client who wanted something very custom. It was a new build out. It wasn't just payments. It was part of a whole build out. And I'm like, you know what? Our software can't do this. We're gonna make you a custom integration. So we did that. And in doing that, we sort of evolved into doing it through Flow. And that's where we've got this first idea of that we're able to do it in Flow. And I said, this is great. We're gonna rebuild our whole product. So it's probably about 2 years since we started, maybe a year and a half since we rebuilt it. And have it in, you know, in the Flow components where it's entirely flexible. So, you know, our first version did have some of these limitations that many of our competitors have. But thankfully, we were able to rebuild it. And, you know, our great engineering team was able to implement these hosted tokenized forms, which is a great trick because Salesforce is very limiting. They don't let you load JavaScript. When you have an app, you can't load external JavaScript. All JavaScript has to be in Salesforce. Right. I mean, so there's a lot of limitations in Salesforce development compared to traditional development that we have to work with. And, you know, thankfully we have some really great minds and great talent on our engineering team. We're able to do this and really implement it in the best way. And, I would say that even though, so we sort of been in the space for quite a few years, but our current iteration is, let's say, we got on the App Exchange just about a year ago, actually, and but we were, you know, we had it as a non-App Exchange package first for probably 6 months to a year before that.
Building an App Exchange business can be isolating. Are you tired of guessing what the right next move is to grow and scale? Don't go it alone. ISV Forge surrounds you with a curated group of fellow ISV founders who are on the same journey. We combine peer accountability with expert-led weekly webinars to help you overcome roadblocks and build a thriving business. Stop guessing and start scaling. Apply for the next cohort today at isvforge.com. That's isvforge.com. And would you say today, you're still doing consulting work at Fast Track Digital today? Has the PayTram kind of SaaS model overtaken your consulting business? Would you say that's the main focus for y'all going forward, or?
No, certainly not. The opposite. I mean, the consulting business is still significantly larger by, like, you know, 10-1 to PayTram, both in terms of the number of clients and in terms of, you know, just in volume of business, but in terms of dollars. But the funny thing is that, you know, when you're in the consulting business and you're dealing with a client, right, and the client could be giving you 10, 20, 30, 50, 100, 100,000, $200,000 a year, right, of work. So you have to deal with them with the white gloves and please and thank you. And, you know, all that kind of stuff that you have to do when you're dealing with a big client. And when you're in the SaaS business, so everybody that's doing that is like, oh, I wish I was in the SaaS business. You just get 1,000 people paying you $100 a month, whatever, you know, whatever, I'm making up numbers here, right? And you got this business doing all this recurring revenue, right? Recurring revenue, everyone loves to say recurring revenue. And it's great. You can forecast and it's just recurring revenue. It's just like, right, that's the die. Right? A couple of years ago, there was like a million, like probably, I don't know, about 10 years ago when SaaS really, I mean, SaaS has been around for a while, but you know, when recurring, they've got all these books about how to make everything should be recurring revenue, right? I mean, your barbershop, you should be recurring revenue. Yes. Everything should be subscriptions, and there's truth to it, right? Because all the advantages, right? There are clearly many advantages in terms of your income and forecasting, and in terms of the dealing with people who are leaving and all that kind of stuff, right? The churn and all that. So all the people that are dealing with it and have to say please and thank you and bend over backwards and really deal with these sometimes very annoying and most of our clients are really amazing. So shout out to you. You guys are great. But here and there, you know, people have deadlines, right? Our fundraising event is coming up, our dinner, our whatever, or our you know, we promised the CEO that this feature was going to be done yesterday and all that kind of stuff. And you have to bend over backwards to satisfy them. Well, you're a SaaS business, right? Like you don't have to do that. You have your business and of course you want to give the highest level of customer service, but the expectation of the clients when they're paying, right? Nobody ever called up Microsoft and said, hey, I'm paying you, you know, $12 a month for 0365 subscription. You know, I expect you to get on the phone. You know, if I call you, you answer my phone right away. Well, no, you'll spend for an hour and get someone offshore who may or may not understand what you're asking them. And then you have to escalate to the manager, whatever. Everyone knows what we're talking about. I mean, sometimes it's great, but oftentimes it's not great, especially when you have a complex problem. And you know, I mean, look on Reddit, right? any company where people are complaining about. So, when you're a SaaS business, you know, oh, that's amazing. I don't have to provide that level of customer service, right? So that's great. So everybody that's in the, you know, agents, everybody, but people in the agency business, like the grass is always greener, right? They're looking over at the SaaS business and saying, this is awesome. I wish I could do that. But when you're in the SaaS business, so there's two things actually that are funny. So when you're in the SaaS business, you realize that it's not so easy to get 1,000 clients, right? It's hard enough to get 100 clients. And, you know, even to get 50 clients, it's hard. So we have our base of, you know, like I mentioned, several dozen clients that are using this. And that was a great starting point. It made us able to really get, you know, customer feedback and be very on top of how it's going, because we're in control of the whole thing. Because we're not only providing them with the software, but we're also in deploying it for them and implementing it for them. And so we can sort of see any other things that need to be changed or optimized. And, you know, now as we're getting AppExchange sales, getting referral change sales from our gateway partners, you know, we're able to really help them and give great customer service on a high level, because we've been there, right? We actually do this as well. But, you know, getting clients, you know, you're getting one, a second one, and a second one, you know, okay, that's snowball, and it takes time. So it's not like, I don't think anybody can in a SaaS product, without necessarily spending, you know, millions and millions of marketing, which we're not doing anything on marketing, really. So to get that, whatever that number is that you need to have a successful business, 100 people, 500 people, whatever it is, it's not so easy. You know, like, oh, I wish I had a SaaS business to get 1,000 clients, they're paying me $100 a month, and I'm done. It's not so simple. That's first of all.
But not so easy to just go sit on the beach with a drink in your hand.
Exactly. But the other interesting thing is when you're doing both at the same time, and that's complicated, because right, we're in this agency model and we're saying, oh, we have the SaaS, you know, horizontal, vertical, whatever it is, we want to get into that. It's easy for us to do, right? And now we're not big enough to hire dedicated customer service staff, right, for Patreon. So the same, you know, the same product managers and people that are dealing with things for our agency business are also double dipping on that. So what happens now when we're dealing with this project? Let's just call it a $50,000 project, right? And somebody's paying me $1,500 or $1,800 a year for Patreon. Is like, oh, I have a problem, you know, and they're just, you know, maybe they're not the most advanced Salesforce users, so they're having a problem, and it's really just a stupid problem, and you know, they should know better. Or maybe it is a good problem, and you know, it needs our skills and expertise to figure it out. But we have to deal with them, because that's the, you know, we have to service them. They're paying us that money and for the product, and we have to live up to our high level customer service. But we don't want to, because we're dealing with this big fun project that's 50 grand. Now we have to deal with this, you know, it's annoying. So it's this, when you have a dedicated team and they're dealing with that, so great. But when you're in this hybrid mode where we're agency and we're a Patreon SaaS, it's hard to give the same level of service, and we really, really pride ourselves on our customer service. It's very hard to give the same level of customer service to the guy who's giving you 50 grand versus the places he's giving you, you know, under two. But we have to, because that's how you build a business, right? If we're gonna neglect them and say they're small, so we don't care about them. I mean, that's not what SaaS is about. SaaS is about that everyone's equal when they're paying you that, you know, lower amounts of money. So it's a difficult transition until you get to that place that, you know, where you're able to handle both in a way where you're not, you know, grimacing when you get customer service requests.
Have you found that being wearing both hats, agency and also as a SaaS business, has that made it challenging for partnering with SIs, or is that part of your, is that a channel that y'all have tapped into?
Certainly that's our main channel that we hope to tap into, because a Patreon is, because it's so flexible, it's not like a 1-2-3 install, right? You actually need to know Flow very well, first of all.
Okay.
And second of all, you know, you need to set up name credentials, external credentials, proper permissions. There's all sorts of stuff that, you know, a newbie wouldn't be able to do. And therefore, you know, most likely this will, you know, would be installed by an admin. And some, not just an admin, but even, you know, a relatively experienced admin. And so for the admins, this is great, because if I'm an admin and I have a client and I have a client, or, you know, I have an agency doing consulting and I have a client that wants payments, I'm happy because it's more work for me, right? I need to configure it for them. As opposed to if it's just 1-2-3, you know, so I install it for them and now they do the rest. So there is the benefit, because it's so flexible, that gives the opportunity for the SIs to implement it. Number one, just for the benefit of the customer, but number two, that's worked for them. So that's beneficial. The funny, so I don't think people look at us like as a competition, if that's what you meant, that like, oh no, like this other agency, we don't want to use their software because maybe then they'll steal our client. You know, we do have this very firm distinction between this Patreon and everything else we do. What we tell people is, you know, we have full documentation. You can install Patreon, your admins can do it. If you can't and you want us to do it, we'll do it for you. And that now becomes a little bit of a gray area, because just in terms of who's doing what, because often what they want in their payments is not just a matter of a basic configuration. They want it to be sending emails and creating alerts and creating records in Salesforce and sending out DocuSigns and all that kind of stuff. And really we're like, you know, why don't we just get you started and your admins will take over, because like you already have an SI partner, you know, that's doing this.
Right.
And what we're seeing more and more is that they don't want to, they're afraid or whatever it is, then they're coming onto us to do the whole thing, including things that are really not related. They're somewhat related to the project, but not related to payments per se. And it's pretty funny how that's coming out, that where it's really the opposite. Like, I would think that they would want to not want us to have exposure to their clients. Like, the other SI should not want us to have exposure to their clients out of fear that we're going to sort of, you know, do too good of a job and make them look bad. But that's not what's happening. They are more than happy in most cases to give us the work to do it, including things that are, like I said, you know, ancillary to the payment processing part of it.
I wonder if perhaps. Yeah, I wonder if perhaps, I mean, I think sometimes you talked earlier a little bit about PCI compliance and the challenges there. I think maybe some agencies start getting wind of requirements related to payment transactions, and that's just the third rail that they don't really want to start touching. And right, probably scary. They're probably happy to hand that off to you. So it ends up creating a nice moat for you.
Business. Yeah, it is. So really it works both ways, right? I mean, on one hand, we're hoping that PayTram could lead us to business in the consulting space, right? When people see that we can implement things in a really robust and great fashion, they'll want to use us for implementing additional things as well, right? So that gets into like, so then the SIs will be scared of us. But we're not trying to poach clients, you know, it's up to the client. But on the other hand, it's the other way as well. And that is that, you know, if we have clients that we're doing work for, since many clients would benefit from payments, you know, we have a front row seat to that, and we're not reliant on other providers and things like that. So it really is a multi, you know, they cross sell each other. You know, we've been doing the agency part for, you know, I mentioned a number of years, 7-8 years now, and the PayTram for just about two. So maybe 2.5, if you count the previous version. And so, you know, we're still learning. We're still trying to hone in on the best way to scale. Of course, you know, we're being on the App Exchange is a great way to gives you legitimacy, right? That's the other way. Even if we didn't sell PayTram at all, just the fact that we're on the App Exchange, when I'm talking to potential clients, I can say, yeah, you know, we're actually, you know, we're the real deal, because we're even on the App Exchange as a Salesforce. You know, we make software for Salesforce, right? Mm-hmm. We're certified by Salesforce and to make software for them. So that gives legitimacy. I mean, thankfully, most of our clients, you know, think we're legitimate without that, because you know, the referrals that we get or testimonials or things like that. But you know, just as an added bonus, that being a software partner with Salesforce does give us that legitimacy.
I wonder, so you mentioned how the application is built up using a lot of ScreenFlow components. And I'm curious if you mentioned also you're not investing too many dollars currently in marketing. Something that I see a lot of folks talking about these days is product-led growth as a channel for increasing revenue. And something I see oftentimes, like on Stripe checkout pages and things like that, you always see powered by Stripe in the corner. Is that something, the ScreenFlow components, I imagine there are many use cases where folks are essentially putting their ScreenFlow into like an experience cloud site, right? So someone outside their company, it's not someone entering in the customer's credit card. It could be the customer entering it directly. And since Salesforce is such a large player, I imagine there are many customers that go through the flow, and their company also uses Salesforce. So I guess I'm curious if y'all have a powered by tagline or anything like that in your ScreenFlows to help.
You know, you hit the nail on the head. Hit the nail on the head with that question. We don't do that. We probably should, though. And in fact, just this week, or maybe it was last week, we have a client we're doing a full implementation of PayTram for. Again, this is actually a pretty big corporate client where they have, are using Stripe currently, and they're switching to traditional merchant service processing because the rates are much, much better, and they can do surcharging and all that kind of stuff. And most of the payments are coming from digital experience sites. And one of my engineers mentioned to me, like, hey, because we're replicating their existing workflow and replacing it with a PayTram one. And currently they send people to a Stripe checkout page. And one of my engineers was like, hey, you know, you see it says powered by Stripe. Why don't we add that to PayTram? that, you know, under our components, it should say powered by either Paytram or Fastenal Digital or whatever. And I'm like, oh, interesting. You know, a lot of times you do see on advertisements on the bottom of websites in the footer, right? It says who the creator was, you know, the design agency, you know, giving themselves credit there. You know, I was like unsure, you know, I'm advertising on their site, but you know, you're right. That's what a lot of big players do, and like Stripe. And we really should do it. And hopefully after this call, I'll go and make a ticket for my engineering staff to look into that.
There you go. Well, and even if you feel, you know, like you said, you're advertising their site. I mean, I think some players in this space, they have a tagline they use to initiate that product-led growth. But then you can also just pay a little more and then that tagline is removed. So,
right,
you know, you could end up being a way to raise revenues that way as well. And I want to go back also to something you said earlier related to price. So it sounds like one of the ways that y'all are differentiating yourself is that you're a much more cost-effective solution for these smaller, medium-sized businesses and nonprofits. And now that you've been on the App Exchange for a little while and been live for a few years, have you had to reevaluate your pricing or your model in general?
Interesting. Also a great question. Not yet, but we're thinking about doing that. We're thinking about it. So right now our price is basically, there's two ways that you can price something, right? One is, several ways. One is based on just what the competition is doing, right? If everybody's charging a dollar for a soda, I'll charge $1 per soda. If everyone's charging $1.50, I'll charge $1.50, and so on and so forth. The other way is just what people are willing to pay for it, right? So if I can have the best platform out there, but if I'm gonna charge $1 million for it, and you know people aren't willing to pay for it, they're not willing. Now, of course, generally people's willingness to pay for something are based on what's on the marketplace, how much ROI it brings them, and all of that. But you know, it also, part of that depends on your clientele, right? So if my clientele are nonprofits who don't have so much budget, right, or smaller businesses who you know budgets are, you know, maybe you know that are not the same as you know some huge company. If I go and say, you know, I have this payment product for you and it costs whatever, and that's just even if it's great and they would have ROI, they just don't have the budget. So like it has ROI but not budget. That's a funny thing, but that's just what happens often. And so part of the way we're pricing is we're pricing in a manner that the clients that we deal with, should be affordable for the clients that we deal with. And the clients that we deal with now, it's not like a scientific price. We charge $1,800 for a license or $1,500 annually. And it's for all users. It's not like these are licensed for per org. So it's $1,800 a year or $1,500 for a nonprofit. Give them a little discount there. And, you know, that's I think the best price of any player on the App Exchange for this kind of software. Our features really, I think, do parallel. You know, besides the fact that we're more flexible, I think we do have all the features that anybody else has. We have the same features. Some of the other products support more gateways. They might support 50 gateways or 80 gateways or whatever. You know, basically with, you know, the Stripe and then the traditional merchant services can really work with any of the gateways that support them. And most gateways support most banks and whatever. So really we could work with the five gateways that we support. We probably could, you know, support 90% or whatever of the United States market of credit cards. So I don't feel the need to try to bend over backwards and support 50 other gateways. But because these other players are supporting 50 other gateways, now that's why perhaps one of the reasons why they have to have a much larger engineering team and charge much, much more. Because how you know, they're doing much more work. Now, I like my sort of strategy is like, you don't need that. Most people can use any of these gateways, you know, or most of them, you know, no matter what merchant service company they're using. So really I think it's getting in front of the merchant service companies or the gateway companies rather, and telling them, when people call and say, do you have a Salesforce integration? Say yes. And, you know, refer them to us. And then the SIs as well, the SIs, when people talk about, hey, payments, they should know about us. So, we're right now a freemium product where we do have a free, totally free, payment processing using authorized.net. And only to transact. In other words, you can't avoid a refund. You can't do subscriptions. You can't save cards. And it only works with authorized.net. That's our free offering. And the reason is because since you know, I sort of figured authorized.net is the, you know, probably the most popular one. I would imagine, particularly among legacy providers, you know, legacy people are doing it. So you know, we'll offer that. Also, you know, pretty easy integration. Stripe is actually more difficult, believe it or not. And so we we decided to go with that one and then limit it to just do transactions. And it's a way for people who just want transactions, you know, okay, so you have it for free, but it's also a way for people to get their feet wet. They can start using it that way. And, you know, if they want to, and most clients do, very few people, I think, are just using the free one. They want to upgrade to the paid one, which allows you to save cards securely, make recurring schedules, void and refund. And so we're a freemium product, but most of our competitors are not premium products, right? They just charge, and they charge a lot more. And I sometimes wonder if because we're different, maybe that's actually bad for us. Maybe being cheaper is not good for us. Maybe it makes us look as cheap. Maybe it makes us, you know, we're freemium. Why do we have to be freemium? Now, of course, we're newer. You know, those other ones are around for you know, at least 8, 9, 10 years. And so maybe that's why. And so therefore, we are trying to reexamine a little bit and, you know, from a marketing perspective, so there's two reasons to change pricing, right? One is from a marketing perspective, like, what would that do for us, right? If we're not freemium or if we charge more, will that actually give us more business? And then the other thing is, of course, obviously everybody wants to charge. You know, we're not trying to be, you know, just like the Robin Hoods here and saying, oh, you know, we're just, well, maybe Robin Hood's a bad example, but we're not just trying to be this, you know, generous, good doers, having cheap software so that nonprofits or smaller businesses can get payments for cheaper. That's not our mission in life. Our mission is to make money. Our mission for business, at least, is to make money. Yeah. Not for life necessarily, but for business is to make money.
You got to keep the lights on. I understand. You got to keep the lights on.
And the reason why we're charging what we're charging is because we think that that's what's going to bring the most business. Now, if we can charge the same amount of money, I'm sorry, if we can charge more money and get the same amount of business, right, then, you know, heck yeah, let's do that and let's raise the price. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who's in a business, software business in a certain industry, and he works there. He doesn't own it, but and they used to charge like $300 a month or something. And a couple of years later, I look and I see they're charging $2,000 a month. And I'm like, how did you go from charging $300 a month to $2,000 a month? And he's like, well, we raised prices little by little, and no one complained, so that's where we're at. And now they're a huge business. They got millions of dollars in venture capital and all sorts of cool stuff going on. So you know, there's a certain, like, we're assuming that people, our clientele that we do business with and that we have access to, so to speak, which is like non, you know, we're not dealing with Samsung and Nike and, you know, these types of companies. We're dealing with smaller businesses that are using Salesforce. So those businesses, you know, we were thinking that $8,000 or $5,000 a year is too expensive for them. So we're going to charge, you know, a reasonable amount of money where we can make a little money. It's reasonable for them. Hopefully they'll use us. And it's $1,800. It's not like a magic number, right? We can try pricing techniques and say, you know, what happens if we charge $2,500? Are they going to say no? You know, I doubt it at this point. Like, you know, what about $3,000? What about $3,500? So I do think that in any business, you know, pricing experiments are important. For us, I think it's actually even more important because I have a feeling that our low pricing is hurting us and the freemium perhaps is hurting us. And I can't prove it unless we do this A/B testing kind of thing. But that's something we're going to look at in the future.
That sounds like a good experiment to run. And that's a good point that sometimes from a marketing standpoint, lower prices doesn't lead to people feeling like they're getting better value. It leads to them feeling like they're actually getting a worse quality product. And it sounds like that's the exact opposite happens to be the case with Patreon. All right. Well, I want to mention, you know, Peter, AppExchange Whisperer, shout out to Peter, was the one that connected us. So I know with working with Peter, AppExchange is probably a core part of your strategy. And I'm curious if you have any specific changes or tactics and strategies you've applied to your AppExchange listing that has helped you see more growth over time and more lead gen.
Yeah, so working with Peter is great, particularly because he's able actually to demonstrate, and you know, it works. What he's doing works. So just to recap, when we were on the AppExchange, we were, you know, if you search for credit card, we were like number like 55 or something, or you know, credit card processing and these kinds of things. We're like number 50, you know, way down. If you scroll way, 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 way down, and of course we I don't know if we got any bites from that. You know, most of our business was and still is coming from referrals from the gateway partners that we have. And so what, you know, we engaged Peter to sort of do a review of our AppExchange listing and, you know, ancillary things. It's not just about the AppExchange listing. It's, you know, it's your website. It's a bunch of things, primarily AppExchange, but it's other things as well. And Peter recommended a number of enhancements and changes, and we've implemented them, most of them. And now we're number one or two. We keep them bouncing back and forth to number one and two.
Wow.
it's that 55
to 1 or 2.
Yeah. So that's incredible. He first it was like 13 and then to 8 and then to 1 or 2 just in a matter of weeks. So certainly Peter knows what he's doing in order to sort of like, you know, SEO, right? So like SEO, the funny thing about SEO is that most SEO people actually can't demonstrate any sort of success like this, you know? And in fact, most of them, the funny thing is you'd ask them like, well, if you're so good at SEO, where's your listing, right? If I search for SEO, are you going to come up? And the answer is no, of course they're not going to come up. It's such a competitive industry that it's not going to come up for, you know, maybe you'll be on page 100,000, maybe. Even if you search for like SEO, let's say the person's in Houston and you search for SEO Houston, most likely the person that's, you know, who's the self-proclaimed SEO expert, you know, that's the first question, right? If you're claiming to do SEO, where's your listing? And Peter really puts his money where his mouth is by, you know, we actually did get to number one. However, you know, I will say that's not it. Being number one doesn't necessarily mean we're making lots of money. Because even though we're number one now for a number of weeks, you know, there are still there's still more work that needs to be done to, you know, get people to actually click on a listing, inquire about the listing, and then close the deal. And get their questions answered. So so now we're working with Peter sort of I actually just updated it yesterday. It's a certain degree after meeting with him again. But you know, is doing more competitive research, you know, in terms of the features that we're highlighting, in terms of the terminology that we're using. It's not enough to necessarily be on the AppExchange for a search term. In a high position. Also consider this, right? Our competitors have been around for a long time. They have hundreds of reviews. We have 3 reviews. So on one hand, that makes it all the more astonishing that with 3 reviews, we're able to get, you know, ahead of people that have 250 reviews and have been around for 10 years. On the other hand, if you're looking at those tiles, right? When you do a search in app, you know, everyone comes up as a listing in like a little box, a tile, all right? And you see us with 3 reviews, and then you see there's a 250 reviews with, you know, we have 5 stars, 3 reviews. Somebody else has 4.9 stars, 250 reviews, right? What are you going to be more interested in? And I think that still people, even though we might be ahead of them or, you know, a couple of rows ahead of them, at the end of the day, when in terms of the listing positioning, at the end of the day, when potential clients look at it, you know, 250 reviews means you're a mature product and everyone's happy with you, especially if you have, you know, 4.9, 4.8, 5, 4.95 stars. So very nice. We have 3 stars, 5, you know, 3 5-star listings, reviews rather. You know, it's still a competition, even if we're ahead of them on the listing positioning. And it takes time to get reviews. First of all, if we were to get 100 reviews today, I think that then, you know, Salesforce would assume that they're fake and, you know, not count them or whatever. So getting reviews just takes time. And, you know, we reach out to our clients, we ask them for reviews. Thankfully, you know, as far as I know, they're all still using us and happy with us in terms of a product. And they will leave the reviews eventually, but I'm only reaching that, you know, I'm sort of, it's paced, you know, a couple of months asking them. And, you know, so it will take time to get the reviews. Now, I'm not saying that more reviews are the only thing that counts. First of all, I don't know enough to say that, but probably there's some magic number, right? Where if you have, let's say 50 and the other guy has 250, maybe 50 is still enough, right? But if you have 3, it's not enough. So is it 50? Is it 40? Is it 10? I don't know. But, you know, getting reviews is certainly important because that gives you the legitimacy that people want to see. But certainly, you know, it is a little magical how, you know, with knowing the algorithms and things like that, you know, how he was able to promote us, and we're thankful for that.
Yeah, very cool. Well, I want to be respectful of time. We should probably start wrapping up. But before we do, I did want to ask. You know, obviously, you've been in the Salesforce space for a long time, and now 3 reviews or not, I think it's clear that PageRank is a very mature product. But I think maybe a lot of listeners are much earlier in their journey, perhaps even brand new to the Salesforce ecosystem. And I was curious if you have any advice you'd give to someone just starting out on building out their an application for the AppExchange.
Sure. I'll say even though we have 3 reviews on our PageRank listing, we have about 40 testimonials on our website, fasttrackftdigital.com. And so, you know, that I am. It's not like I feel... deficient, and we have the I think our clients think we're great. It's just a practical matter of doing it. You know, we don't have self-esteem problems because of that. That's what I'm looking for. Self-esteem, you know, self-esteem is healthy. But in terms of what to look for, I think that and I would say, you know, with the humility that, you know, we haven't made it yet, right? We're still We're still there. It's not like we've done it and I'm looking back. We're not at the top of the mountain looking down, giving advice. We're sort of like, you know, still at the bottom, but a little higher than maybe some of the people starting out.
I think that makes advice even better, honestly, to have to get advice from someone. I think it's good to have a mentorship from folks that are ahead of you in the journey, but maybe not too far ahead of you, because, you know, especially someone who is building a product for the App Exchange when it first launched. You know, those are very different days, very different market, very different ecosystem than today. So in some sense, advice can get a little bit stale, I think, if you get too far ahead in the journey. So actually, I think you're very well positioned to be talking to someone.
So there's really three or four points to it. Number one is in terms of like just working with Salesforce. So we love Salesforce, of course, because they're an amazing platform. But of course, there's a million things to hate about Salesforce too. So in this case, for the benefit is that all Salesforce wants to do is make money. And therefore, if you have an app and, you know, that doesn't go against the policies or terms or whatever, they'll take you as an ISV partner. You don't have to, the threshold for that doesn't seem to be too high, right? If you have a good idea, I mean, in fact, if you look at the App Exchange, although it's not as bad as, let's say, the Android Play Store with the level and quality of apps that are there, right? There are, you know, sort of if you can write code and pass the security review, you can have an app. And that's why there are many 1- and 2-star apps. So that's not a big deal. You know, sometimes it takes right to get the right rep, and these reps switch every 2 weeks. You know, they're on vacation for a month, and then because Salesforce has a liberal vacation policies, and then when they come back, they get changed to the different position, and you get a different rep. So you never want the same rep for more than a couple of weeks or months straight, but. In any event, you have your rep and you get your business agreement with them, and you're able to, you know, now make your software. But then the hard part is passing the security review. And part of what's annoying about it is that when you do what you think you have to do, and particularly for payment processing, right, where you're dealing with API integrations, you're dealing with sensitive information, not so simple to pass the security review. And I'm not embarrassed to say we failed multiple times before we passed.
Very common.
Part of it is you really don't get good support from them. Now you could, they do have this office hours, or I forgot what they're called, where you could actually make a meeting with somebody. It's like you have to book like 2 months out because they're, you know, they don't have that much availability and a lot of people want to do it. But the people that are giving the advice are, you know, it is very helpful, but it's not as helpful as it could be. At the end of the day, they still don't know exactly everything that they, I'm not the reviewer, so I don't know exactly. Well, you know, so the company should get their act together and figure out how to get people to pass it. I mean, right. People are not looking to make, damaging software or software that has holes in it, you know, for a security perspective. So give them what they need to know, you know, you're even charged for it. Like just give them what they need to know to get it to pass. Don't like make them guess. And Salesforce wants you, they make you guess. Now they do charge $1,000 every time you submit it again. So I guess there's a reason for them not to make you guess. But the fact of the matter is that it is difficult to pass that. And, you know, getting somebody who has done it in the past, or getting the office hours, or, you know, coming up with out of the box ways to get what you need to get. And of course, every software is different. If you're, you know, a simple software, not without API integration or something like that, then it's much easier. But like with us, we're loading, you know, the external JavaScript is a problem, you know, APIs, payments, it was difficult. So that's just, I think, the hardest part, of course, the whole thing. I mean, that definitely took us many, many months. And don't forget, we don't have a dedicated engineering team dealing with this. It's the same engineering team dealing with our other clients. So we're sort of like doing this in tandem, and it took a long time to get to it. That's number two. Number three is like your App Exchange listing, right? And someone like Peter, you know, was really great. Could definitely recommend him. But just really doing the competitive research and knowing what you want to put on your listing and things like that is important. And then number four is just your overall marketing. So App Exchange just does one piece of the puzzle. And depending on the industry and segment that you're in, it may or may not be your biggest referrer of business. You might find other better, cheaper, whatever, more effective referral partners. So having a marketing plan, you know, we have a website. A website is not a marketing plan. And we haven't done this marketing plan part yet. You mentioned partnering with SIs. I would love to do that more. And you know, like I said, we have plans for these kinds of things. Thankfully, we do have a core group of clients from our referrals and our existing client base from our agency. But for someone who doesn't have that and they just want to create an app for Salesforce, that would be very difficult, because getting your first, you know, like I said, getting to 1,000 clients, you know, once you have 200, probably from 200 to 800, I'm sorry, 200 to 1,000, right? Getting those 800 is probably easier than getting from 0 to 50. Because that each one is painstaking. Once you're a brand, you're out there, people know about you, people refer you, it's a snowballs, of course, like anything, it snowballs. So I would say, try to do something to get your core, some core numbers, so that you're actually, you know, just to get to 10 can be so hard, and devastatingly lonely, you know, until you get that and like, why is something wrong? Why aren't people using it? So being able to, you know, we know our product is marketable. We know that it's a use and it's good and it works and it's very flexible and all that. So we know that for a fact. So any questions we have about why we're not selling more is our marketing, sales, business questions, not product questions.
Mm. Yeah, getting that flywheel in the early rotations, getting the flywheel started can be very difficult. But well, thank you so much for this conversation. I think it was super valuable to listeners. It's really, if folks want to learn more about Fast Track Digital or PayTram or get in touch with you directly, where should they go?
Sure. Feel free to email me directly. Sruly, Sruly at ftdigital.com. So you can do that, or you can go to our website, ftdigital.com. We also have paytram.io. It's, you know, on the Fast Track Digital site, there's a link to Paytram as well. And we have contact forms on there. If you don't remember my email, that's fine. You can just fill out the contact form and we'll get back to you as well.
Great. Well, we can add those links into the show notes as well. But thank you again. Really appreciate it. And we'll chat soon.
Awesome, Scott. Thanks so much for the opportunity. Take care.
Thanks, really.
Bye-bye.
Are you looking to connect with the most dedicated founders and builders in the Salesforce ecosystem? The AppSemblyLine audience is made up of the exact ISV partners and entrepreneurs you're trying to reach. We're opening up a few sponsorship slots to partner with brands that can truly help our listeners succeed. If you're ready to connect with the leaders of the AppExchange, you can learn more at AppSemblyLine.com/sponsor. That's AppSemblyLine.com/sponsor.